Well, in family photos, what pets manage to make a cameo in your household? The dog, no doubt. The cat, maybe. Certainly not the goldfish, I imagine. What about a baby wombat? Or a baby quoll? Or how about a Tassie devil? You really haven't seen cuteness until you've looked back into the eyes of a baby Tasmanian devil. I'm doing it right now. Oh, impossibly cute. And if their tragic trajectory continues as a mysterious facial tumour invades remaining populations of the Tasmanian devil, you may never have that chance yourself. Animal photographer Alex Kearns specialises in studio portraits of pets, but she uses that studio work as a springboard for her other passion, and that is wildlife conservation. She's recently photographed Tassie devils to raise funds for a 24-hour wildlife hospital, I gather. Next year, it's off to Thailand for elephants and northern India for bears. We want your job, Alex. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Now, you had a very, very different job once, didn't you? You actually started your working life as a police officer.
I did. I joined when I was very young. I was 19 and I was the youngest police officer in the state at the time. And I ended up in policing for 14 years, and I guess towards the end of my career, it's just knowing what people did to each other kind of wore me down, and I'd started my photography business in there as well, and it really took off. So I thought, well, this is the direction I want to go in. I want to, you know, still do good, but do it in a different way, I suppose.
A very different way. I mean, yes, you were right there with the chaos of humanity.
Yeah, definitely. The last 2 years of my career I spent at the Child Abuse Unit, which, you know, as you can imagine, is very intense and quite full on. And that was probably where I had the moment where I just thought one day, just literally, I'd reached my limit of knowing what was going on out there and just wanted to live a kind of life like everyone else, where, you know, I wasn't suspicious of people all the time, and do something a little bit nicer where people were pleased to see me when I turned up, I guess. So photography is perfect for that.
It's interesting that you were worn down by the abuse of children in that role, working in the child abuse unit, because even today now with your work you're also documenting the abuse of animals. So let's go back though. Photography is one thing, but photographing animals, wild animals at that, yep, is another. So was that a very specific decision of yours? Did you have a very particular affinity?
Yes, I definitely did. I guess since I was a child, I've had an affinity with animals. But really for me, when I first bought a digital SLR camera, I thought, oh, I'll photograph everything. You know, I'll photograph tractors and landscapes and birds. And very quickly, within a really short period of time, I realised that animals were actually all I was good at. So I kind of had to stick to that. So there wasn't a lot of choice for me. And when I was photographing people, if a duck ran past, there'd be more photos of the duck than there would of the people. It was just a very...
It's the sort of thing I'd do.
Exactly, a seagull dropping by. I gravitated towards them. So it was a progression for me that I didn't entirely have a choice in. It was something that I just did. And also, I think animals are the only thing I'm really good at, and what I enjoy the most too. So I had to be true to myself in that, I guess, as well.
I should describe some of these works. These are close-ups. And I'm looking now at a little baby hawk's eyes looking back at me. And there's that wombat as well. Not a wombat, a Tasmanian devil, just right there, close up. And look, I'm thinking of that fabulous recalcitrant wombat that used to scurry across the screen at the end of that RSPCA advert. I mean, are wild animals actually willing photographic subjects?
They are. Everything other than dogs and cats is actually quite easy. So native animals are actually very easy to photograph in the studio kind of setting, which we had in Tassie. So we just basically pop them on a backdrop and let them do whatever they want to do. So there's not a lot of control going on in that situation, which I think is how you get those amazing shots with character and personality. But wombats by nature are the funniest little things. They're either tantruming and hiding in the burrow and just saying no because they can, or they're running and, you know, headbutting me and rolling around. And so for photographs, they're just the best subjects for character and scurrying around. Adorable.
Although sometimes I'd want to get out the film camera rather than the actual, you know, photograph still camera. I mean, as a photographer, though, you really have seen the best and worst in our relationship with our non-human animal friends. I mean, yes, treasured pets and abused wild animals. They are part of your spectrum.
Yes.
What's the toughest assignment that you've had?
Oh, I think anything I do where there's an animal that's been a victim of some sort of abuse. I mean, when you start looking into the stories behind these animals, they're just heartbreaking, whether it's horses that have been rescued from, you know, the meat markets, or elephants have been rescued after being attacked by villagers overseas, or there's so many stories. But like the work at Child Abuse Unit, when people used to say, how can you do this? How can you handle being exposed to this sort of stuff on a daily basis? The difference is being able to do something about it. So with the children, it was being able to assist in the arrest of offenders. And with animals, I think it's being able to know that firstly, they're safe now. All the places I work at, they've been rescued, and they've got a better life because of that. And secondary to that is, I suppose, the fact that by taking those photographs, I can raise funds and awareness for their plight.
Do you think, though, taking a cute picture of a Tasmanian devil is going to change people's attitudes towards the devil? And let's come to the Tasmanian devil, because it is in dire straits with a facial tumour disease, but also it's a victim of roadkill in Tasmania too, so there's a double whammy happening to that small little population.
Yes, definitely. I think when you talk to people generally about devils, and we've been talking about our work that we've been doing in Tassie, everyone loves the devil. But I think people's perception of them firstly is quite inaccurate. They think they're dirty, aggressive, smelly little things that just, you know, run around and kill everything. When in actual fact, they're fairly timid and shy unless they're provoked in any sort of way. And they're scavengers. So the roadkill issue is, at the moment, Tasmania has 500,000 animals a year killed on their roads, which is, you know, 1,300 a day plus. And the devils obviously feed on those carcasses, so devils are being run over. As you mentioned, the devil facial tumour disease, which we don't really have a cause or a cure for that at the moment. So the population has declined 90% in the last 18 years. And I had the privilege there to photograph two adorable baby devils. Natasha, that was the sweetest little things I've ever seen. And the pictures are just unlike anything I've seen before as well, which is fantastic. But their mother had the devil facial tumour disease and had to be euthanized. So there's an amazing story there about the cycle of life, how they've continued on. The disease can only be transmitted through bites. So because they've never been bitten, they were still okay, and they'll grow up to be happy and healthy. But I was photographing them, and I had a real moment where I stopped and just thought, oh, I hope that I'm not telling this story in 10 years, and that these are either the last of their kind, or the devils are going to be wiped out in the wild fairly soon if we don't do something. And it really got to me, the fact that the pictures need to be out there.
It did. Have you seen the facial tumour disease at close quarters?
I've seen photographs of it. I haven't seen it in person, but it's absolutely horrific, the fact that they can survive through it to a certain point, obviously before they pass away. And it's one of the most devastating, aggressive things I've ever seen on an animal, I guess. It just literally, you know, takes away their face, it eats away their face. It's horrible. And the Tarkine area that you mentioned earlier is the one area in Tasmania that at the moment is still believed to be disease-free, and there are devils in there. So it's an extremely important, I guess, conservation area for that in that regard.
A last refuge.
Yes.
In photographing the Tasmanian devil, though, what then happens to that photograph? What are you actually doing, and what are you raising funds for?
Yeah, I think firstly, I guess even just photographing them in a studio shows people that you can work with them. They're accessible. They're not, you know, necessarily just out there trying to snarl and eat everything. So that's kind of important. Important message firstly, that they can be cute, which I think is always interesting with an animal like a Tassie devil. It's not necessarily a word people would put with them. And from that, the pictures themselves, they're a great resource, I suppose, firstly for Bonorong Wildlife Sanctuary to raise funds and awareness. And we're helping them by, actually, we've released three of the pictures. There's a baby devil, baby quoll, and a baby wombat as a series to try and raise some money for them, selling them as a limited edition set of three canvas images, which we're promoting at the moment. And we're releasing some more pictures too on Australia Day, because there's another great set of Australian animals in there that they have, including a few of the devils. So yeah, just it brings in income, and it opens people's eyes. And, you know, if they actually want that on their wall, they're then reminded all the time of the devil, and from that comes conversation.
I think you're raising funds for a 24-hour wildlife hospital, though, aren't you?
Yes, exactly. So that's where the money will end up going. Part of it, that directly benefits devils, I guess, because the people at Bonorong have a rescue network at the moment, kind of like a first response group for roadkill or animals injured by cars on the road. So they have a text messaging system where they send out a text and someone responds to, say, a wallaby been hit by a car. If the wallaby's passed away, they drag the carcass off the road, so that alleviates devils running out to feed on it at night. And they check the pouch for young. Those animals, if there are babies in the pouch, then go to carers, but then there is nowhere to take those animals for treatment. There's no specialist wildlife facility in Tasmania, and very few of the vets specialise in wildlife. So Bonnerong Wildlife Sanctuary is trying to build Tasmania's first 24-hour wildlife hospital to, I guess, make that whole process be a full circle of rescue, rehabilitate, release for the animals.
Yeah, the roadkill, when you drive through Tassie, the roadkill is absolutely phenomenal in scale. I just want to pick up on something you said. So what you're showing is a cute little Tasmanian devil. You photograph them. They've got a black backdrop. They're removed from their natural habitat. They're removed from their animal kin. Mm-hmm. And that's a risk, though, isn't it? Because people need to know that habitat is what keeps these critters healthy. And yet you're kind of sanitising their world. And that is not a world that's going to keep them alive.
No, we did do some outside photographs with them as well. So there's that kind of balance there. But I think the beauty of studio, instead of relating it to habitat, is it just makes it about the animal. So what I want to do sometimes is just show that animal in its purest form, without anything to enhance or detract from that, I suppose. So by popping it on a white or black backdrop, it's just the animal. So people are looking into its eyes. There's nothing else in there that's kind of telling part of the story. So I think that's kind of important too, to show that, you know, they are standalone as creatures, just beautiful, and kind of works. And as I said, we did do a bit of the balance of the outdoor stuff too, just so we have a bit of that. But the studio stuff, I think, is actually more powerful in a way, because it does influence people a lot more, because it's different. So it stands out, which is an important part of it as well. In a very photocentric world, we're bombarded by images all the time on social media and, you know, television, and to stand out is quite difficult. So to get a picture that's shot in a different way probably has just as strong message as one that's shot in the environment.
Hey, Alex Kearns is my guest on Life Matters this morning. She's an animal photographer. She works with all sorts of critters in studio, but also in the wild. And Alex, you've got involved in wildlife tourism, which interests me too, as a conservationist approach. So you're heading off, for example, to photograph elephants, I think, in Thailand, but you're also heading to northern India next year. And this is all part of an adventure tour with the Free the Bears Fund. Tell us about that event.
The India trip's amazing. It's 18 days in India, and Free the Bears, it's based in Perth, actually, as it happens, and run by Mary Hutton, an amazing lady. She's in her mid-70s, and she's actually responsible, or her organisation is responsible, for taking the last dancing bear in India off the streets. So I think they have about 600 bears there in care, and that means big football-sized sanctuaries with, it's like a natural environment for bears, and they're running around out free in these amazingly huge fenced off areas. And we're heading there in October next year with Free the Bears. I think Mary might even be coming on that trip, visiting two of her sanctuaries to see the work and take photographs, and the people on the tour can actually participate in what's happening there, which is a really great way to be hands-on and really help the bears. A portion of the tour is donated to Free the Bears Fund as well, and we're very excited about it. We're also doing some stuff with tigers while we're there too, going to a national park where the tigers are in India. Just a real privilege to be able to see these animals in their natural environment.
Mm, it is, but I guess it's also, is it a sustainable way to save the bear, to have them in sanctuaries? And it's a question of what conservation efforts we prioritise, I imagine, isn't it? Because even some of the world's most celebrated zoos and most progressive zoos leave me totally bereft, because the critters are there in cages displaying all the neurotic behaviours that come with captivity.
I think I've been to the bear sanctuary in Cambodia, and I probably like, and the Indian one I think is a lot bigger than that itself. I actually didn't see any of those behaviours that I have seen in zoos before, of animals pacing and stuff like that, because the enclosures are so well planned and thought out. It is as close to natural environment as they can get, short of having a fence around it, obviously. But at the end of the day, the bears are very well cared for, and they've separated males and females, but they're not sterilised. So there is also the potential that to possibly have some sort of breeding program in the future and re-release bears into the wild. But to do that, we have to change the attitudes of the people living in those countries and in those areas. Otherwise, it's just futile. They're just going to end up, you know, back where they started, or you know, in India, the problem was bears being used for entertainment. In Cambodia, it's bears being used for food and other things. So it's really about educating the people before we can do that and feel that they're going to be safe out there back in the environment.
Where does all this work leave you in terms of how you reflect on the nature of humanity and our relationship to other animals?
Yeah, look, I have my moments. There are days I can't let the things I see or the things I hear about really get on top of me. I have to know, too, that there's balance. There are really good people out there doing really amazing things. There are people out there who devote their lives to saving animals and really live it every single minute of every single day. And I feel very blessed to be able to meet those people. And for me, that's what makes my heart sing, that there are good people out there. I do believe globally there are more good people in the world than, I guess, you know, the bad people, if you want to put it that simply. But that's the only way I can do it, because sometimes it is overwhelming. The things that we do to animals, the things we do to each other, it's a drain, an energy drain. And, you know, like the situation in Tasmania and raising funds for this hospital, it's $250,000. And I really feel for Bonorong.
It's a pittance.
It is, and that they have to fundraise for that. Like, you know, that should be, whether it's government or big donors or corporations, someone, you know, should, I believe, you know, could write them a check and donate that money. And it's just so hard to fight, you know, for every single cent for these animals. And really, they should be, animals and environment should be a massive priority for all of us.
Yeah, we forget that actually, as humans, we are the minority animal
exactly.
on this planet.
Exactly.
Only, there are only, what, 9 million, well, how many? 7 million, billion of us.
Yes.
Many
yes.
more animals besides.
Yep.
Alex Kearns, thank you very much and congratulations on your work. Good luck with the tours next year.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been great.
Animal photographer Alex Kearns joining us on Life Matters. Now, coming your way next, a very personal testimony.